I know a lot about Sharp City.
And it's great.
Whether you're looking to fillet up a Dover sole or slice into your favorite cattleman's cut, the folks over at Bertarelli Cutlery know all the ins and outs about how to get your kitchen knives as sharp as the dickens. Family owned and operated for over 50 years, Bertarelli Cutlery offers St. Louis's finest knife sharpening services, as well as having all the gadgets and gizmos for your kitchen needs. So head on down to Bertarelli Cutlery on the Hill, visit them on Facebook or online at BertarelliCutlery.com.
Welcome back to The Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
Hey, welcome back to The Hardline. 590 The Fan and 590TheFan.com. TJ Moe here with Dave Rapp, Matt Rocchio. We are hanging out until 3 o'clock. Joining us now is the head coach of the University of Missouri, one of my coaches when I played there back from 2009. He was there until 2011 before taking off from Memphis and coming on back. Now he is at his alma mater leading the Tigers, Coach Barry Odom. Coach, how you doing?
TJ, what's up, man? I'm doing great.
How is this your 15th interview today?
No, you're not the first and you're not the last.
All right.
So somewhere in between.
Do you guys still have
Wait a minute. You're like old and married now. So what's going on?
I am old and married. And that largely is thanks to you, because if they wouldn't have let me on the field. But, you know, I had to show them your text message that said that was okay.
How's your much better half?
She's much better than me and will continue to be. You know, I saw a pic. Dude, your boys are getting huge. I don't want to call them by name here, but I saw your
it's
wife.
It's crazy. My oldest is not that I'm a tall guy, but he's caught me, and I don't know that he's passed me, but we're not going to put it to the true test. But he's looking eye to eye, and so anyway, I can deal with that.
How old is he now?
I'm all right with it. 13.
Wow.
Yeah, he's an eighth grader.
Oh, and
they're playing first year of school football, and life's changed, man. Crazy.
Oh boy, that is awesome. Well, your life is about to get a lot more hectic here coming up, I assume. So what I've tried to do here, and you tell me if any of these questions are too much to ask or out of bounds here, because what I've tried to do is not give you the general. So Derek Dooley's going to be on the offense here. What are you thinking? So I've tried to dive into this a little bit and make us think.
I like how you change your voice, your influence and enunciation to go into reporter voice. That's awesome.
Well, here we go. Here's my reporter voice.
Whatever. If I don't like it, I'll just say next.
Perfect. I like that. And that'll move us right along too. I don't even have to ask why. So there you go. Here is my first question. So Joe John Finley is still there as your tight ends coach. He was at Baylor for a bit, and I know he had a large influence on the Josh Heupel offense there. Are we going to see a lot of the Baylor principles that we did the last few years now in the Derek Dooley offense?
Well, first and really foremost, with the staff that we have and put in place, fortunately for me, we were able to keep Joe John, and that was a big hire. That was a big keep, because he had a couple of opportunities elsewhere that he could have gone on and worked with some people that he was familiar with, in other places. So that was a big priority in the offseason, because he was so instrumental in not only the structure on how we played offensively, but also he knows the system and the program on how we've been running it, and he could see that we were getting close to getting this thing turned. So it was big for him to stay. He's an outstanding recruiter. He's awesome in the staff room and unbelievable around our kids. Not that old. He's got a lot of ability to communicate and relate, but also his football knowledge and IQ is really, really outstanding. So with that, bridging what we did last year, keeping it intact, his philosophies, and maybe some things that he wanted to get to the last couple of years and we weren't able to, without question, those principles are still built into our offense. I think one of the things that was most exciting about getting Derek here was he wasn't wanting to be the guy to come in and this change everything. and say, hey, we're not going to run the, you know, we got to run my system, we got to do this. It was collectively working together offensively to put together the right plan for our kids on giving them the ability to put them in position with their skill sets to go play fast, and also infusing some new ideas that, that we think will help us over the course of 12 weeks.
So,
sorry for the wrong answer. Did I answer the question?
Next, no, that was perfect. My question next though is this something I know the what you guys always try to get to rep it enough to where you don't have to think about it. Is this offense significantly more complex with keeping a lot of the old principles and now adding some new wrinkles?
I wouldn't say significantly. It wasn't that. You know, it's not drastically different. There are some new concepts. We've actually huddled, which is pretty cool at times. You know, we learned how to come out of a huddle and line up. Guys have had to learn formationally on how to adjust some different things with spacing, with alignments, using the hash mark, wherever the ball's located. So there's a little more thinking with that. But at this point, after 21 practices, plus a spring ball, plus all the walkthroughs, we're playing pretty fast with good tempo.
So I was going to get to this question later, but you brought it up here. I was looking up each of your last 2 years and plays per game. So in 2016, you guys were 14th. You ran 80 plays per game, which was a blistering pace. Last year, you dropped to 78th and only 71 plays per game, but that was largely because you scored in one or two plays. The pace was still similar. What kind of pace can we expect this year?
I think a lot of times you look at those numbers, and yes, in 16 we were going as fast as possible. Last year there were times, especially late, you know, the latter half of the year, that if we got a lead, we did slow down the pace. And just because you're not snapping a ball with the shot clock at, you know, 30 seconds, it's still, you can have the defense feeling like that they're playing with the tempo that, that causes them to have concern. I think there's a lot of different ways that you play with tempo, whether it's coming out of a huddle, whether you're addressing the ball quickly, check with knees, whether you're doing things formationally to make them adjust and snap the ball. All the different ways that, that tempo can be described, I think it's important. The easiest thing, in my opinion, to defend on the other side of the ball is if someone does the same pace all the time. Mm-hmm. And if it's fast, then obviously you're going to, you know, you're going to plan for that and know what's coming. The thing that I admired about when I was at Memphis with Coach Fuente was they had so many different elements of speed on how they played. Sometimes it was, you know, a blistering pace. Sometimes it was, you know, in a huddle and then fast coming out and addressing the ball. Some, you know, there's so many different ways to approach it. But you can only do what your kids can do. I mean, all that stuff looks great written up on the chalkboard, right? But if they can't go do it and it doesn't make sense to them, then it's of zero value.
So last year, Demaryius Crockett, coming off a 1,000-yard season as a freshman, got banged up a little bit, ended up having shoulder surgery, and you had Ishwitter had a big year, but Larry Roundtree was the big revelation. He's a very physical back. This year, what kind of split are we going to see between those two?
I think, you know, we're really listing them as either or however you list that when you've got co-starters. They're kind of the same guy, and both are have the ability to be a guy that runs between the tackles, but also some things in the counter game that fits their style. I think more than anything, TJ's, we've got to be able to establish a presence on the line of scrimmage with our offensive line. But the two backs with Crockett and Roundtree, the way that they're running with a physical presence and finishing runs and north and south and maybe having to make a move and then get back vertical, their game is fairly similar. But if we can get both of those guys playing at the level that is their best, then we've got an opportunity to be able to run the ball effectively week in and week out, not just against somebody that's a lesser opponent.
Last question on the offense here. Okay, well, two more. The obligatory, how much are we going to see under center? I bet you answered this one a bunch today.
No, actually, you're the first one, so congrats.
Wow, all right.
There's some things that we've worked on under center. I would, you know, I don't want to put a percentage on it, but you know, we've worked on that just like we've worked on being in the shotgun. I think it's important in the different concepts that we're getting to that we're not always in the gun or we're not always under center. So, you know, Drew's taken snaps under center. Well, it's kind of exciting to watch. It's kind of cool. It's like, you know, formations that some guys didn't know existed.
Yes, and the huddle as well. So with Coach Dooley not officially calling plays prior to this year, did you guys use the scrimmages as game-like experiences for him?
We did, and for everybody, and offensively and defensively, because we've got some moving parts that are different this year. So, you know, our two really live scrimmages plus our mock game that we had, we went just like it was game day. And we had the clock on, you know, the lights on at night. We went up in the box, and we had the communication with the new rules within who can and who can't wear the headsets, you know, signaled the plays, took TV timeouts. We try to do exactly like the game will be Saturday afternoon. And I thought it was good that, you know, we had a halftime. They came down and made some adjustments. And then we took TV timeouts between as many as we take on a game. We tried to do that as well, just to make sure that we can get our kids in position to go play fast and give them every opportunity that there's not anything new to them or for them on Saturday afternoon.
For those who have not been paying attention here, the sidelines are going to switch this year. How much is that going to change your game day stuff with people up in the press box now being on the other side?
Well, the thing that's unique this year, and it's for everybody, it's a rule set by the NCAA, is the number of guys that can wear headsets, and it's a set number of 23 people, and that you sit there and you think, wow, that's a lot of people. No, not really, because there's only your assistant coaches can have them on, and then your working graduate assistants, which is set by rule. There's two on offense, two on defense. So I'm gonna wear one. Okay, 10 assistants, so that's 11. Then you get four GAs, that's 15. Okay, and then four others can be student athletes. So those are your guys, like your backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. What they wanted to get away with was the huge staff sizes of, you know, of all the former coaches that are on some staffs that are really in whatever role that they have them. But they've, you know, see boxes of on game days, and there's like no room to stand in some of the coaches' boxes. So they put that into effect this year. So that'll change it a little bit. I mean, you've got to be strategic on who is on them by the rule, and then what is their role, and make sure that you've got eyes in the right spots, and then from there you're able to communicate to give your kids a chance.
And I bet Nick Saban's pissed with his 24 offensive analysts not being able to wear headsets this year. So, Coach, I'm looking at your turnover differential from last year. You guys, as a defense, you created 17 turnovers. As an offense, you gave away 25. That was the worst in the SEC at a -8 there. Now, I've been in practice with you, so I know that defensively that's your number one thing. You're doing the can opener. You're finding ways to strip the ball. Was last year more of a product of turning the ball over too much or not getting enough turnovers? And secondly, what did you do this year to change that number?
Well, you look at in the history of football, and doesn't really matter what era you go to, and a historical study on this, there's not one stat that is more related to the outcome of a game more than the turnover margin. And I've known that for a long time. Last year, so it's not like it's a new revelation. We turned it over too many times, especially in the beginning of the year. And obviously on the other side, we didn't get it back enough. That has been our number one focal point and rallying cry as far as in-game football on playing smart team football together. And one of those bullet points underneath that is number one, turnover margin. Offensively, take care of the ball. You know, you get down in the red zone, come away with points. Defensively, somehow, some way, find a way to get it back. Take it away and give it back to our offense. And at the end of the day, if you're plus one or more in turnover margin, your chances of winning the game greatly increase. If you end up plus two, it's almost 80% winning percentage. I mean, it's crazy. So it all goes in together. It's about discipline. It's about habits, about doing it in practice. It's about making the throw and the catch, getting upfield, high and tight, tucking it away, defensively finding a way on getting your hand on the football. Tip balls, overthrows, coming up with them. Okay, we've got to be better tacklers, getting the ball out. And then when the opportunity, when it's on the ground or in the air and it's a competitive ball, we've got to want it more and find a way to come down with it. So we've talked about it a lot. We've focused on it. We've pointed it out in practice. It's a huge emphasis for us. And you also, you know, it's not like I didn't do that in past, but I made a daily emphasis this year. I know my guys are tired of hearing about it, but knowing the facts and the history of what it translates into, it needs to be the first thing out of my mouth.
Yeah, you know, some of last year was bad luck, too. I mean, you guys fumbled 13 times, which was that was about middle of the pack, actually, towards the lower half, but you lost 11 of them. I mean, when you lose 84% of your fumbles, a lot of that is just bad luck. So I would expect some of that to change just based on the football bouncing your way this year. So each of the last 2 years, Coach, the defense has really picked it up midseason. The first time was because you took over the play calling, and you actually matched largely in five games the defensive stats from tackles for loss and sack standpoint that you had in the first seven. But last year, the same thing happened. So what do you do to get the boys ready now to be in midseason form at game one?
Well, I think simplified, you know, and lessons learned, and you're always trying to make your program better. And some of that and most of it comes with critiquing self and critiquing staff and critiquing absolutely everything you do and find out if it's not working, what are the reasons? Why are they? And let's get them fixed. So a lot of time spent in the off season wondering and thinking, and we didn't wait till the off season to try to figure it out. But the reasons why we didn't play well earlier, and there's a number of those things, in my opinion and our opinion as a staff, one of those, and maybe most importantly, is asking them defensively to do a little too much. I think when we simplified everything, focused on playing fast, being aggressive, understanding the fits, where you are, where you have help, where you don't, and focusing on those things, TJ, then we played faster, mm-hmm. We played with more energy, and in turn, played smarter football. So a lot of that, you know, went into the preparation going into the Winning Edge program, which carried over into spring ball, which is carried over to the fall practices, which I think we'll see a product of that week one.
Yeah, you guys got a lot of experience coming back in the front seven. I am excited about that. You guys led the SEC in tackles for loss last year, and it's amazing. When I look at the stats, you guys had very few average stats. I mean, it was rare that you were anywhere between 6 and 9. It was largely either first or last. You were first in tackles for loss, but you look back at the secondary and dead last in allowing 254 yards per game passing. So this is more of a philosophy question outside. So say your weakness is the back four, which at this point you hope it's not. How do you as a coach compensate or protect guys in the back four with coverages or assignments and simplifying things to make it a little bit easier?
Well, you want to make sure, number one, that everybody's on the same page and we understand what we're good at or better at than what our deficiencies are. I also am a firm believer if you're really good up front in your front seven, then you're able to do some things on the back end and get away with it. If you're not very good up front and you don't have the ability to get to the passer, then you better be very, very good on the back end on making sure your coverage sound. So there's a balance there on, you know, perfect world. You want front seven, back four being, you know, equally good. Rarely does that happen. That there's usually one that's a little bit better than the other. I feel like we've got an opportunity athletically on the back end that we've got a chance to be as good as we've been in the secondary in a long time here. And then in our front seven, if we can stay healthy and continue to push, we've got a chance up front on the defensive line to allow some things on the back end with a four-band rush, and that would benefit us all.
Yeah, you got some big boys up front. Question here. Coach Hill has moved to special teams coordinator. This is the first year you've had one of those, correct?
It is, yeah. And I think it's big for us in a lot of areas with the addition of the 10th coach that was added rule-wise this year. That allowed some flexibility in being able to make that move. And I think Andy's, without question, has done a great job on giving enough time and energy and focus on making that aspect of the game an advantage for us. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out with the hidden yardage in the punt game and the return game, and then, you know, emotional big-time plays in the kicking game can really turn and dictate the outcome of a game.
All right, last real question for you here. With a new redshirt rule that allows guys to play up to four games without burning their redshirt, what kind of strategy is in that? Because this is, you know, I know you got a lot of young receivers here. Is this something where you would try to stack guys and not play them in the same games in order for them to be available later in the year?
Well, we've got the ability, really, to get some guys' experience and kind of see where they are. I think if you look at anything historically over the years with guys at redshirt, you know, are you better at the age of 22 or 23 than you are at 18? Yeah, probably. But really, just like last year, we played 13 true freshmen. I thought we played our best ball when we just decided to go that route. And we've taken the approach as a staff, when a guy walks in the door, I don't care if he's a fifth-year senior or a first-year player in a program, we're going to teach him and coach him and love him and direct him and get him in position to go play winning football. And if we get to the point that they're playing winning football and can help us, I'm not going to worry about the four games. If you're recruiting right, then you're going to find a way to get those guys on the field.
We're going to see some chest bumps this year. We saw a few last year.
I'm going to find you and chest bump you. How about that?
You know, there's a, well, I know you see this because the Mizzou Twitter puts it out every time you guys get a new recruit. You screaming down the sideline, headset falling off, going over to high five somebody. I need to see that a few times over the next few weeks. Okay.
That'd be good.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much. I will talk to you soon.
Thanks. Y'all have a great one. Thank you.
You too, man. That was Mizzou head coach Barry Odom joining us there. He's great. He is really, really good.
Just a couple of Tigers talking football there.
He's fun. He,
just a couple of Tiger football
and we,
players.
We were buds when I was – so I'll give you – I went to speak to his character to some degree. When he left Mizzou and I was – I was at home after I tore my Achilles, so I did a lot of my rehab.
Right.
Not in Boston. I was in St. Louis. And I'm just kind of hanging out. And maybe it was even 2000. I think it was 2014. So I was like done with rehab and hanging. And he's at Memphis. And there's nothing that he can gain from me.
Right.
And he's calling from Memphis saying, hey, I want you to come meet the boys. Come hang out sometime. That's just what, if you want to know what kind of guy and coach he is. I mean, we've been buds. But there is something to just keeping up with your players and hanging out and still loving on them. And
do you have that coaching itch? You think that's in
no,
you?
No, absolutely not. Nope.
Don't want to coach?
Nope.
Don't want to deal with kids or just don't want to coach?
If I had it, I would be a GA for Odom already.
Okay.
Or at least I would ask him if he would have.
Would you have? Yeah, that's what I'm going to tell
him. How come you don't think you have that coaching itch? It's just something that's just never tickled.
Smart guy.
Kids are stupid,
like,
man.
To explain yeah. things, you know?
Well, I like to
seems
tell you
like
you're
teaching,
wrong.
No, but it seems like it would. It seems like... You know, no offense, not that you seem like a gym teacher or anything, but
if you could,
seems like, you know, coaching would be up your alley.
I'll phrase it this way. If you could take away all the stuff and having to deal with players potentially being knuckleheads, if it was just being at a whiteboard, doing the X's and O's and being on the field, working with the players in the just the football capacity, would you, if you could take away all the
receivers
stupid
coach.
Stuff.
You could be the Mizzou receivers coach.
Or even that, or even with those caveats, is it still not something that just triggers you as much?
Just don't get me, man.
I've always been
more of a doer than a, yeah. you know.
That makes a lot of sense.
B.O. calls you, says, T, I need you as my receivers coach. You're saying no. You're saying, I'm sorry, I got a radio show, coach.
Yeah, I don't know if
I got to go pretend to listen to Cam and Raph talk about hockey today.
You know, that's probably a decision I don't have to make.
I love that last quote he said. If they're playing well, I don't care about the four games.
Yeah.
I love that
yep.
mindset of Barry Odom just right off the bat. And also, I just want to say this really quickly. The quote where he said, just because you're not snapping the ball at 30 seconds doesn't mean you're not doing things that make the defense have to worry about your pace. That's a quote that if you're worried about how the pace of the offense was last year and how it affected the defense, that's a wonderful quote to see from Barry Odom, because it sounds like he's wanting the offense to temper it and being like, hey, you don't have to always be snapping into 30 just to make it seem like the defense is freaking out. As somebody who coaches defense, I'm aware of this fact.
Yep.
I like that quote a lot. As somebody who's that's the one thing from last year that I'm really harping on, is how much better is the defense going to be just because of that difference.
And I told you this to some degree. I didn't